Welcome to Behind the Headlines. I'm Kat Wright, and I've got your daily roundup of some of the big stories of the day that our reporters have been covering across the UK. In some cases, I will chat to the reporters to get the details of the story they've been covering, or in many cases, they've filed a package from the scene. So more of a news digest than perhaps your usual chatty podcast style. Today, we're in Edinburgh with the Prime Minister for his first meeting of the nations and regions. And we've also got a special extended piece on the 40th anniversary of the Brighton bombing, where a former Prime Minister was targeted but survived. And we look ahead to this weekend's Rugby League Super League final. But let's start off in Edinburgh, where the Prime Minister has chaired his first meeting of the Council of Nations and Regions. First Ministers from Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland were joined by England's Metro Mayors. And Sir Keir Starmer says there was a huge positive feeling when he spoke to our Scotland political editor, Alan Smith, afterwards.
The Prime Minister says he wants an end to talking shops and to reset the at times tense relationship with devolved administrations. But did today's event deliver?
Credit where credit's due. He's setting off in that direction to try to do that.
Well, we've already seen a massive transformation in terms of the relationship between the Welsh Government and the UK Government.
The First Ministers of Scotland and Wales certainly sounding optimistic. Both pressed the need for greater investment in things like public services, and funding was undoubtedly the big talking point for everyone in the room. But when pressed on levelling up money promised to councils and regions by the previous UK government, Sir Keir Starmer couldn't give me any guarantees.
Today was part of the levelling up discussion because it was about collaborating to make sure that more money is going in, more investment is going in, and that everywhere people feel the benefit of that through living standards and better jobs.
But certainly no commitment on funding that had previously been promised.
Well, look, today was a sort of slightly different focus because it was about growth and jobs.
So what looks like a positive start to the Prime Minister's mission to improve partnerships will no doubt be put to the test when the Chancellor delivers the UK budget later this month.
That was our political editor in Scotland talking to the Prime Minister in Edinburgh. Now, this weekend marks exactly 40 years since the Brighton bombing. The IRA blew up the Grand Hotel on the seafront, where a large number of Conservative MPs were staying for their party conference. Now, I'm from near Brighton, and while I don't quite remember the actual bombing or the news coverage, I was just a bit too young, I do remember the front of that hotel being very, very badly damaged and covered up for what felt like years. It turns out it was 2 years before it reopened. But it was such an iconic thing for at that time. Our reporter, Katie Ahern, has spent the day in Brighton for us. Katie, remind us what happened on the night of the 12th of October 1984.
Well, 40 years ago, members of the Conservative Party were getting ready for their annual conference in the Grand Hotel that's just behind me. What they didn't know when they started their stay was that there was actually a plot to kill then Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, and a bomb had been planted in the bathroom in her room. Luckily, she managed to get out of the room 2 minutes before that went off. Others weren't so lucky, though. Five people were killed and 34 ended up injured when that detonated.
Now, I know that the Tory party conference did carry on time, just hours later, and Mrs. Thatcher opened it by saying, "This is our opportunity to show that terrorism can't defeat democracy." And as I said, it was an IRA plot, and Patrick McGee, who planted the device, he was given 8 life sentences in 1986, but he was released in 1999 under the Good Friday Agreement, so he'd served just 13 years. Katie, what else do we know about those behind the plot?
Well, actually, Detective Chief Superintendent Ian Robinson, who was the head of the Strathclyde Special Branch when they helped catch the gang in their Glasgow hideout, has been talking to our reporter Ruth Ridley. He's been telling her how it took them 8 months to catch them.
The previous evening, we had had information from the RUC that a man named Peter Sherry was coming across to Eyre Harbour in a fishing boat. So I sent a team down there. We were to follow him and see where he went. They followed him successfully up to Glasgow Central, where they handed him over to the Metropolitan Police. They were the intelligence gatherers from the IRA. I thought our involvement in the Peter Sherry affair was finished. The Met had taken him, and I thought that he was going to London, going on the London train. What I found out later was he got off at Carlisle. I was at home. I was painting the garden gate. And my wife came home and said, "They're on the office wants you." I went in. they're coming back to Glasgow. Sherry and another man.
What do you remember then of the arrest?
I got this team together. Story was to be, I thought, we'll knock on the door and we're delivering pizzas. McGee had come to the door and he had been brought up in England and he could do an English accent. He said, can I help you? And Brian just grabbed him and pulled him out and the rest of them dashed in the house. So they went in and collared them. So that was it. They got McGee, a guy named MacDonald, Ella O'Dwyer and Martina Anderson in the house.
What was your reaction when you found all those weapons and bombs stashed in the flat?
I sent a team to the house. They had with them explosive detectors. And when they went into the house, the detector went mad. It was going, fee, fee, and they thought it had a fault. They didn't find anything. There was nothing there. So the machine had a fault. I thought about this. I thought that guy was so insistent of what he'd seen, and he seemed fairly reliable. I sent another team down, and in the cellar in the close, they found explosives and timer devices. There was 34 of them. And some of the timers were running.
How dangerous was that for people living nearby?
We had the bomb disposal man came down. And I asked him, what would happen if all this went off just now? He says, well, 100 yards would be completely destroyed. And up to 500 yards, there'd be severe damage. And 750 yards, there'd be flying objects. You know, it was a really serious find.
That was former detective Ian Robinson, who helped catch the Brighton bombers. Back to Casey in Brighton. And how is this 40th anniversary being marked in the city?
To be honest, from speaking to people today, it seems no one's really marking the occasion at all. The Grand itself is holding a 2-minute silence tomorrow in their lobby, but that's sort of just for the guests and as a bit of a quiet remembrance, they've told me. And I've also been chatting to Tony, who was part of the choir at St Paul's Church just round the corner from here. Their vicar actually got blown from his bed when the blast happened. He said they do actually honour those lost in their prayers each year.
We tend to remember these things on anniversaries, of course, and obviously while there are still people around who were there, I think maybe, you know, there are still people in the Conservative, who are or were in the Conservative Party, who are still alive and can talk about it, whereas in another 10 years they might not be with us anymore.
Also spoken to the former Scottish Tory leader Jackson Carlaw, who was there that night as well. He says the memories are really vivid and the effects can still be felt today.
There are things you just never quite forget, and that is an event I will never forget. I was woken up in the middle of the night. I went along and did what I could to help, and then of course afterwards realised that someone I knew, the wife of the Scottish President with whom I'd just been earlier that evening, was one of those who was seriously injured and who subsequently died. There were political conferences before the bomb and political conferences after, and I think it changed the whole character of the way in which politicians engage in this country. The security blanket that came down after that night meant that I don't think the public have ever had the same ability to interact with politicians that they had before it.
Remembering the Brighton bombing, which happened 40 years ago tomorrow, the 12th of October. Still to come on Behind the Headlines, we look ahead to this weekend's Rugby League Super League final. But first, the government is being warned that lives are being put at risk if it doesn't make water safety lessons mandatory in schools. It's after 17-year-old Joe Abbess from Southampton and 12-year-old Suna Khan from High Wycombe drowned in a rip current off Bournemouth Beach. Charlotte Butt has more on this story for us.
At an inquest earlier this month, Dorset senior coroner Rachel Griffin ruled the children's deaths last May were accidental. But she's now written to the Education Secretary calling for water safety to be added to the national curriculum, adding a failure to do so could lead to future deaths. It's a sentiment echoed by Joe's mum, Vanessa Abbess.
If any message can be taken from our loss, it is that rip currents can be dangerous and everyone should know and practice the RNLI advice of float to live.
Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson now has 56 days to respond to the coroner's report.
You're listening to Behind the Headlines. Now, this weekend is the final of Rugby League's Super League. Wigan, who seem to be in it pretty much every year, take on Hull KR. Now, if they win, they could claim their first Super League title. So let's focus on them. Gavin Rutter takes a look.
Yeah, victory for Rovers at the grand final tomorrow would see them become only the fifth club ever to be crowned Super League champions. And it would be their first title win since 1985. They go in very much the underdogs, though. Wigan are going for a massive seventh triumph in the modern era. Robins captain Elliot Mancella, though, is going into it full of confidence.
We don't want to shout from the rooftops what we want to achieve and all that kind of thing, but we have an internal expectation because of the quality of people around. 10 years, 15 years' time, you know, we'll all be sat in the stand coming to watch these games, and we want to be able to say that we played our part in, you know, being successful.
Well, it's thought there's going to be around 65,000 Rugby League fans packing out Old Trafford tomorrow, with fans across East Hull and beyond watching on at home.
And finally, we've not managed to speak to anyone about this yet today, but I just thought I'd throw in one of my favourite stories of the day. Two very special penguin chicks have hatched at Hertfordshire Zoo. After all the Oasis hype earlier in the year, they've been named Liam and Noel, and there are only around 40,000 African penguins that remain in the wild. And if you want to find out more on these or any other stories we've been covering, they're on the news pages of our radio station websites, or we're across social media. And don't forget to subscribe so you can always catch up with our digest of the day's news every weekday on Behind the Headlines.